As a kid, I used to get on to Dad or lecture him for taking these so-called shortcuts that he knew about. We would be on our way to Illinois, and he'd say, "Oh, I've been this way before. We'll try it." We'd end up lost. And just even yesterday, we were headed to Bolivar. We were going to take a shortcut, and I was saying, "Oh, we're going to get lost." Well, this morning I had to pick Christian up in Ozark at a friend's house, and I said, "Oh, I know how to get there behind Riverdale." Anyway, the so-called shortcut didn't end up short, and I was lost. So anyway, funny how things happen. We come full circle. We had left off. We were in, and sorry, I feel like I just ran in. If we turn to chapter 16 in 1 Kings, get caught up here in my notes. 1 Kings chapter 16. Let me get exactly where we left off. We had just finished chapter 16, and we were going to begin chapter 17 today with the discussion about Elijah. And this is too low. Just to catch us up, so we had just finished that chapter 16. We're going to go into 17. We've got the confrontation of Ahab here that we're getting ready to read about. And for those of you who have not been in this class, we're just kind of skipping around. We've been looking at the divided kingdom. And we're nearing the end of that discussion. But it's an open discussion. And so if you've got questions or comments, please feel free to make them. Jump in anytime if I'm skipping over something you want to make a comment about. We are just doing our best to go through this and mine for little nuggets that I think will be, a lot of this is good stories, some stories that we've forgotten about or I had forgotten about, and then a lot of good points for us to take along in our journey of our life, see the mistakes that they made and see them for who they were, and then also to analyze ourselves and make application to our own lives. So, here we are in chapter 17, verse 1, and I'm going to read the first six verses. It says, "And Elijah, the Tishbite of the inhabitants of Gilead, said to Ahab, 'As the Lord God of Israel lives before whom I stand, there shall not be dew nor rain these years except at my word.' Then the word of the Lord came to him, saying, 'Get away from here and turn eastward and hide by the brook Cherith, which flows into the Jordan, and it will be that you shall drink from the brook, and I have commanded the ravens to feed you there.' So he went and did according to the word of the Lord, and he went and stayed by the brook of Cherith, which flows into the Jordan. The ravens brought him bread and meat in the morning, and bread and meat in the evening, and he drank from the brook." So here we have kind of an interesting story. It's always a neat story about how he was taken care of here. But we see immediate instructions, and I'm just going to call it kind of instructions to get out of Dodge, so to speak. God sent Elijah to this Cherith raven, and he was going to be receiving drink by this brook, and then he was going to have ravens that were going to feed him bread. And we see that he was going to get bread and meat in the morning, and then he would have that bread and meat again in the evening. Kind of a neat little story there. I didn't have a lot I wanted to bring out in this chapter 17, but I like that story. It's kind of a neat little story. And so then if we get into chapter 18, where we've got more about Elijah and Obadiah, I'm going to read verses 1 through 5 here. It says, "Now it came to pass after many days that the word of the Lord came to Elijah in the third year, saying, 'Go present yourself to Ahab, and I will send rain on the earth.' So Elijah went to present himself to Ahab, and there was a severe famine in Samaria. And Ahab called Obadiah, who was in charge of the house. Now Obadiah feared the Lord greatly. For so it was, while Jezebel massacred the prophets of the Lord, that Obadiah had taken 100 prophets and hidden them, 50 to a cave, and he had fed them with bread and water. And Ahab had said to Obadiah, 'Go into all the land, all the springs of water, and to all the brooks, perhaps we may find grass to keep the horses and mules alive, so that we will not have to kill any livestock.'" Again, kind of a neat little story here, but we've got this, here we are in the third year of this severe drought, and God sent Elijah back to Ahab. And One thing that I don't know that we've talked about up to this point is that who was King Ahab married to? We just mentioned her. Jezebel, okay? Real nice lady. And, you know, you think about that name Jezebel. Does anybody know anybody by the name of Jezebel today? You know, funny, I mean, I think that's kind of interesting. You know, you don't... We see a lot of biblical names that people are named after, and we know a lot of people, and you know a lot of people that don't know anything about the Bible. But it is interesting that that name, you don't hear that name today. And I think that's kind of funny, but I was thinking, I wonder if anybody knows anybody named Jezebel. Yeah, this is true. Yeah, okay, good point. So, you know, here we find Obadiah, who's actually in charge of Ahab's palace, and he was, and it was mentioned here, a devout believer. So, he's a devout believer in the Lord. And Elijah had crossed paths with Obadiah and called him to go to Ahab. And he told wanted him to tell him that Elijah was here. And after a bit of resistance, we see that Obadiah agreed. And we're also told that Obadiah had hid 100 prophets, 50 in different caves. And it was during that time that Jezebel was doing what? What was she doing? Yeah, so she's killing off the prophets. And so it gives us a little insight to the kind of man that Obadiah was. And then we skip down in that same chapter. We go to verse 16. It says, "So Obadiah went to meet Ahab and told him, and Ahab went to meet Elijah." So here we've got Ahab going to meet Elijah. And what is he? He calls him the troubler of Israel. And Elijah puts... you know, the blame back on Ahab and his family. And remember, and I think, Larry, that was your point, but not only was his wife incredibly evil, but what do we know about Ahab's father? Is he a good person? No, it says that he had done even more evil in the eyes of the Lord than even the previous five kings that preceded him. So you're talking about a very evil lineage. And... So if we in chapter 18, and I know this is a lot of reading, but it's a good story, and I think reading from the Bible is good. So let's just do that. And I've got a microphone, so I'll do that. I'm in chapter 18. Let's go from verse 19 through 40. I know this is a lot of reading, but let's do it. "Now therefore, send and gather all of Israel to me on Mount Carmel, the 450 prophets of Baal, and the 400 prophets of Asheroth, who eat at Jezebel's table." So Ahab sent for all the children of Israel and gathered the prophets together on Mount Carmel. And Elijah came to all the people and said, "How long will you falter between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal, then follow him." But the people answered him not a word. Then Elijah said to the people, "I alone am left a prophet of the Lord, but Baal's prophets are 450 men. Therefore, let them give us two bulls, and let them choose one bull for themselves, cut it in pieces, and lay it on the wood, but put no fire under it, and I will prepare the other bull, and lay it on the wood, but put no fire under it. Then you call on the name of your gods, and I will call on the name of the Lord. And the gods who answer by fire, he is God." So all the people answered and said, "It is well spoken." Now Elijah said to the prophets of Baal, "Choose one bull for yourselves and prepare it first, for you are many, and call on the name of your God, but put no fire under it." So they took the bull which was given to them, and they prepared it, and called him on the name of Baal from the morning even till noon, saying, "O Baal, hear us." But there was no voice, no one answered. And they leaped about the altar which they had made. And so it was at noon that Elijah mocked them and said, "Cry aloud, for he is a god. Either he is meditating, or he is busy, or he is on a journey, or perhaps he is sleeping and must be awakened." So they cried aloud and cut themselves, and was their custom with knives and lances until the blood gushed out on them. And it was so when midday was past that they prophesied until the time of the offering of the evening sacrifice. But there was no voice, no one answered, and no one paid attention. Then Elijah said to all the people, "Come near to me." So all the people came near to him, and he prepared the altar of the Lord that was broken down. And Elijah took 12 stones according to the number of the tribes of the sons of Jacob, to whom the word of the Lord had come, saying, Israel shall be your name. Then with the stones he built an altar with the name of the Lord, and he made a trench around the altar large enough to hold two seas of seed. You get the feeling here, you know, it's this story, I love reading this story, and I like this story, but, you know, he gathers them around in tight. I mean, think about this. They've been jumping around acting like goofballs, cutting themselves and, you know, trying to yell to their God, and nothing's happening. You almost get the feeling at some point in time you could hear a pin drop. You know, gathered them around, he gets quiet, he gets still, he gathers these stones, he's putting them around. Can't you see them just intently watching, thinking, oh, I hope what I think is going to happen doesn't happen. You imagine how embarrassed they're probably thinking this is going to be if this really does happen. Here we are in verse 33. And he put the wood in order, cut the bull in pieces and laid it on the wood and said, fill four water pots with water and pour it on the burnt sacrifice on the wood. I think this is interesting. We've been using, magicians use assistants all the time, and here he's going to go use their people for their assistance. Go get some wood, go do this. And they're just going right along with it. I just love this visual that this gives for us, this very quiet, confident way about going about it. Then he said, do it a second time, and they did it a second time. And he said, do it a third time, and they did it a third time. So the water ran all around the altar, and he also filled the trench with water. And it came to pass at that time of the offering of the evening sacrifice that Elijah, the prophet, came near and said, Lord God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, let it be known this day that you are the God of Israel, and that I am your servant, and that I have done all these things at your word. Hear me, O Lord, hear me, that this people may know that you are the Lord God, and that you have turned their hearts back to you again. Then the fire of the Lord fell and consumed the burnt sacrifice and the wood and the stones and the dust, and it licked up the water that was in the trench. Now when all the people saw it, they fell on their faces and they said, the Lord, He is God. The Lord, He is God. And Elijah said to them, seize the prophets of Baal. Do not let one of them escape. So they seized them, and Elijah brought them down to the brook Kishon and executed them there. Amazing story, isn't it? Can you imagine? So you see this, and we're going to talk about tonight. I've titled my sermon, The Perfect Storm. But we're going to talk about visualizing things that are good reminders for us. We didn't have to see this. This fire, the dust that was consumed, the rocks that were consumed, the bull, all these things, and they were soaking wet. We don't have to see it. We read it. We know it happened. And just as they saw it in front of their face, and then so quickly, as they typically did, forgot, it's so important for us, too, to be able to read these stories and know that this happened, and know that this is the God of the universe, and if He asks us to do something, we do it. But, you know, here we have these people, and they witnessed this firsthand. And we might say, well, man, how did they witness this firsthand? How did they see this, and then just like every other time, go back to doing the things that they used to do? Such an important thing for us. Don't we see and know of God's power all the time? I mean, we may not get to see these miraculous things right in front of our face, but we know what God's capable of doing. We've read it over and over and over, and we're told about it. And yet, we too sometimes struggle with keeping the faith. But what a neat story. So Elijah and Ahab call the people of Israel to Mount Carmel, and they bring 450 prophets of Baal and 400 prophets of Asheroth. And so here we see, and of course, what a way to end that story. You know, he sees them and brings them to the brook of Kishon and then executes them there. So what a visual to follow the visual that they just had. So verse 40, Elijah commands them to all be killed. And, you know, I don't know that I ever remember Elijah specifically. I know I read that, but specifically commanding them, the prophets of Baal, all 450, to be seized and killed. But they did. So does anybody know what happened to the 400 prophets of Asheroth? Kind of interesting. He specifically mentions the 450 of prophets of Baal to be seized and taken and killed. But what happens to the 400 of Asheroth? Later we're going to read, and we'll get into that here in a minute, but I don't know that we're specifically told, but there's a chance that we may find out, because there's another mention of 400 people being mentioned, so maybe that was it. But if you've got an answer later, we'll get into that. But I thought it was interesting. You grab the one group and seize them, and you take them and kill them, and then the other 400 just disappear. So, and then let's go to verse 41. It says, "Then Elijah said to Ahab, go up, eat and drink, for there is the sound of abundance of rain." So here we have in verse 41, he tells him to go eat and drink because the sound of rain was coming. And we have the account of him telling his servant to go and look towards the sea. And as you may remember, how many times, just from memory, how many times he went and did that to look at the sea? Seven times. So seven times he goes and he looks, and then he basically tells him that, hey, there's a cloud the size of your hand that's forming. So he sent the servant to tell Ahab to hitch his chariot before they were stopped by this rain. And then if we skip on down to verse 46, it says, "Then the hand of the Lord came upon Elijah, and he girded up his loins and ran ahead of Ahab to the entrance of Jezreel." Now, I don't... Maybe the NIV seems like... And I'm out of the New King James today, but it seems like I read... maybe my NIV, it says... Did he tucked his cloak in and ran ahead? I don't know exactly how it words it or where I read that. Maybe it's English Standard Version. But he ran ahead of Ahab all the way to Jezreel. Interesting. Again, just one of these little tidbit things that you read and you go, so he ran ahead of him. Just interesting part of the story. It sounds kind of crazy, but that's what he did. Okay, before we get into chapter 19, does anybody have any questions, comments, or thoughts about... Because we've read some pretty neat stories there, but any other thoughts about any of those chapters?
I think it's interesting that he repaired the altar of the Lord. So this must have been a gathering place for Israel to serve God and sacrifice.
Okay, that's good. Yep, good point. It's interesting.
Seems pretty drastic that he just took those 400 down by the brook and just...
Executed them, yeah.
Right there. But that points out that those were the 400. They were the leaders. They were the main ones. They were the false teachers, so to speak.
Right.
So that shows that you have to take pretty drastic measures against those who are leaders leading the wrong way.
Yeah. Well, and all along, what were some of God's commands when they would go take over these areas that were bad? He wanted them completely wiped out. And what did they do about every time? Did they do it? No. And, here again, like you said, you've got 450 leaders you took care of, but where'd the other 400 go? You know, I mean, another interesting point of you're still going to have evil. And it seems dramatic and it seems drastic, but it was done.
They would have been good witnesses.
Oh, can you imagine? Maybe that's why he let the 400 go. He wanted enough people to go tell. You will not believe what happened. Number one, we saw this fire consume all this soaked up stuff, and then 450 of our other buddies got killed. Yeah, good point. Yeah, I don't know. That's very interesting. Okay, so here in chapter 19, it starts with Ahab telling Jezebel everything that Elijah had done, and how he killed all of the prophets, and he sent a messenger. That she was going to take Elijah's life at that time. Same time tomorrow, as a matter of fact, which I always found interesting. You know, you read through that and you think, well, it would have been interesting that you sent this messenger. Couldn't this messenger, instead of just bringing the message, just killed him? You know, it's interesting how God plays a part in all of this and how this all plays out. But so... Which is interesting because, by the way, it was enough to cause Elijah to what? Did Elijah take the messenger serious? Yeah, so he runs for his life and actually asks God to... What does he ask God to do? Which I think is interesting.
Take his life.
Yeah. He actually lays down under a tree. Matter of fact, we've got that in verse 5. It says, "Then as he lay and slept under a broom tree, suddenly an angel touched him and said to him, 'Arise and eat.'" Oh, let's see. Where does he say, take my life? Sorry, I missed that verse. Four. And he prayed that night that he might die and said, is it enough? Now the Lord, take my life, for I am no better than my father's. So here we have him asking for the Lord to take his life. He falls asleep under this broom tree. An angel touches him and says, get up. And he sees this cake. If you remember this story, kind of a neat story again. He saw this cake by his head and a jar of water, which he eats and drinks. And then he lays down again. And the angel of the Lord came to him a second time and had him eat and drink for a journey. Now, you get the feeling that if he had not done that, of course, he wouldn't have been able to be sustained. But he did exactly what the angel of the Lord told him. And then how long did he travel for? Does anybody remember that part of the story? Somebody said 40 days? Yeah, 40 days and 40 nights. And until he reached Horeb, which is the mountain of God. And he spent the night where? Does anybody remember? In a cave. So verse 8, so he arose and he ate and he drank and he went in strength of that food 40 days and 40 nights as far as Horeb, the mountain of God. And then we go on, it says, and there he went into a cave and spent the night in that place. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him and he said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? And so the middle part of that chapter 19 finds another one of these major events in the life of Elijah, where the word of the Lord came to him. And why do you think God appeared to Elijah? That verse 10 spells it out. So he said, I have been very zealous for the Lord God of hosts, for the children of Israel have forsaken your covenant, torn down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. I alone am left, and they seek to take my life. So we've got Elijah. You know, we've been reading about Jeremiah. We've read how others got down, and they were maybe at a low point in their life. And you get the feeling here, Elijah, he's got a little self-pity going on. He's a little bit down and out, and oh, I'm woe is me, and I'm kind of all alone here. And then we come to verses 15 through 18, give us some specific instructions for some anointing. So it says, then the Lord said to him, go return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus, and when you arrive, anoint Hazael as king over Syria. Also, you shall anoint Jehu, the son of Nimshi, as king over Israel. And Elisha, the son of Shaphat, of Abel Meholah, you shall anoint as prophet in your place. It shall be that whoever escapes the sword of Hazael, Jehu will kill, and whoever escapes from the sword of Jehu, Elisha will kill. Yet I have reserved 7,000 in Israel. All those knees have not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him. So we've got some very specific instructions for Hazael, Jehu, and Elisha, who would succeed Elijah as prophet. I don't know if there's any significance. I don't know if anybody's got any points to make about those specific details or those anointings, but it is kind of interesting there. Is anybody having comments about 15 through 18 at all? You know, I think it's interesting that God tells Elijah that he's reserved 7,000 in Israel whose knees have not bowed to Baal. And Elijah, you know, here he feels alone, and he was far from being alone. And I think that's the point. It's just a reminder here, hey, you're not alone. You may think you're the only one left that's doing the right things. There's plenty of others that, you know, their knees have not bowed to Baal. And I think this is no doubt his way of encouraging him. You know, and I think this is a reminder to all of us. I think this is a good point for us to all. You know, at times we look at our own number here and it seems maybe small. At times we look around at work and you might feel like you're one of the few that are doing the right thing. But in the end, there's many of people throughout the world. There's many of people in the United States that are doing the right thing. And it's easy sometimes to maybe get down and feel like Elijah's feeling. Anybody have any thoughts about that? Okay. In verse 19, it says, so he departed from there and found Elisha the son of Shaphat, who was plowing with 12 yoke of oxen before him, and he was with the 12th. Then Elijah passed by him and threw his mantle on him. So here we've got Elijah finding Elisha plowing, and he's calling him to service. And Elisha runs after Elijah, made a commitment to him, but asked him to go kiss his parents goodbye. And Elijah granted his request. And does anybody remember what happened here in verse 21 without looking? Well, we'll read on. It says, so Elisha turned back from him and took a yoke of oxen and slaughtered them and boiled their flesh using the oxen's equipment and gave it to the people, and they ate. Then he aroused and followed Elijah and served him. Why would Elisha do this? Anybody have any thoughts on that?
He didn't need the oxen anymore.
Okay, I think that's a good point. And what do you think, what kind of point was he making about his commitment? Yeah, I'm committed. I'm moving forward. What did the Romans do to the bridges as they crossed them in battle? Burned them. Completely destroyed them. Why? We're moving on. We're not going back. There's no turning back. And this to me is such a good point for all of us. We all know that, there might be a sin that easily besets you, or there might be something you struggle with. How do you handle it? You get committed and you move forward. You completely burn it, you destroy it, you get rid of it, whatever. Whatever it's going to take for you to get that out of your life and move forward so that you don't turn back to it. You know, I look at this, and I know this is a different context, but I'm saying I think that application works for us today. And that is that, listen, you get committed and you do exactly what he did here. To this point was made here. He's not going to need him anymore. Well, get rid of it. Move forward and move on. Does anybody else have any thoughts or comments about that?
You wonder what it means because he was plowing with 12 yoke of oxen. He slaughtered one yoke of oxen. So there's 11 yoke of oxen
left
running around there.
That's a good. I don't know. That's a good point. I don't know. I hadn't thought about that. He maybe didn't have time to take care of all of them. I don't know. Anybody have any thoughts about that?
Just said he was found with the 12.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, Larry. It's an interesting.
I kind of doubt that this was the way we might think it would be. That would be 24 oxen, and there's no. There's no, I don't think there's any way they would have had implements that required 24 oxen to pull it.
A lot.
So, maybe this means that he had that many. I don't know. But I wouldn't think that he would have been using more than two at one time to actually plow a field with. But, I don't know the full meaning of it, but I cannot imagine
that
he would have had 24 oxen pulling the plow.
Yeah.
He probably had others working.
Probably,
yeah. Another
cruise, and so, yeah, and I think it's just a visual. I think it's a visual on those two, and like you say, it's again just his commitment to what he was. That's right. Yeah. Well, think about that. Yeah, that was his life, and now he's yeah. So, okay, that brings us to chapter 20. We're not going to look at a bunch of specifics that deals with King Ahab battling and dealing with this main enemy of Aram or Aram. We've been dealing primarily with the north, the northern group this far. We've had eight straight evil kings. So just to kind of keep things in perspective for us here, we've had eight straight evil kings in the north, while the south up to this point, we've looked at them last week a little bit. There have been two good kings and two evil kings in the south. Kind of up to this point. So we've got eight straight evil kings in the north and two in the south, two good, two bad. And to punish both the northern and southern kingdoms for living their own way instead of following God. That's what we're talking about. God allowed other nations to gain strength and become their enemies. And the three main enemies over the next couple hundred years were who? One I just mentioned, Aram, Assyria, and Babylon. Those would be your three main that they're going to come up against. Aram is the first to rise to power, which we find here in this chapter 20. And Assyria took Israel into captivity, and then leaving Judah for the next age of Judah alone. While Judah was taken into captivity by Babylon for somewhere around 136 years. And then we get into chapter 21, and we'll just use the last 5 minutes here. Another good story, but we know that's about Naboth's vineyard. Can someone just take one quick minute to give us an update on, or to go through Naboth's vineyard, that chapter there? What's the high points of that story? Yeah, you can do whatever you want.
So she ended up having him killed
and saved him. Yeah, okay. That is the high point. It's pretty evil and kind of sick. And then, of course, the end of that chapter, you know, from 17 to the end, about Ahab's death there and the prediction of that, it's kind of interesting. And then we've got in chapter 22, Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, goes to the king of Israel and asks to join forces against Ramoth Gilead. And if you look in, so I'm in chapter 22, if you go to verse 6, then the king of Israel gathered the prophets together, about 400 men, and said to them, "Shall I go against Ramoth Gilead to fight, or shall I refrain?" So they said, "Go up, for the Lord will deliver it into the hand of the kingdom." So here you've got 400 prophets called by Israel, and it makes me wonder, and I don't know the answer to this, but is it possible that these are the 400 prophets of Asheroth here? Maybe it's just that number that caught my attention, but I posit that because I don't know that we're ever really told what happens with those 400 of Asheroth, but could this be that group?
I don't know if they were called prophets or not. It said
I don't know.
That they were of the grove.
Okay.
In some translation.
Okay.
The grove. They were part of that worship that Jezebel had set up on the, or Ahab.
Yeah.
But I don't know if they were.
It probably isn't, but it made me wonder. You know, it's probably just the number that caught my attention. But it'd be interesting, and I haven't come across it or I don't know, but I'd like to see if someone ever figures out what happened to that group of 400. And it may be listed somewhere, so maybe that's a little homework for us all to do and try to figure it out. And then we've got, and I don't know if I'm saying it right, Micaiah prophesies against Ahab. We read about that. And I think what we'll do is just for the sake of stopping there, it's a good stopping point for us to not get into anything else. Does anybody have any last comments or thoughts about any of those chapters, 16 through 22, or any points they wanted to bring out that I didn't?
My wife and I were discussing the 12 yoke of oxen, and we wondered possibly there were 12 men that were all plowing with one yoke of oxen each.
Yeah.
And he passes by all of these, and it says that Elisha was with the 12th. So it implies maybe that there may have been men with the other 11 as well.
Yeah.
And he was working together with these men in the field, as we've seen farmers
sure.
over the years working with, you know, multiple tractors in one field.
Yeah.
We have 12 yoke of oxen. And then he says Elisha was with the 12.
With the 12, yeah. Okay.
And oxen normally required, they weren't driven like horses. They required goading with rods and sticks. And you would think that if you were 12 yoke of oxen behind the lead, it would be difficult to guide your oxen. So it's a question. It's speculation on our part. But it's possible he was only with one yoke of oxen, and that's the yoke of oxen that he slaughtered.
Yeah, could be. Okay, that makes good sense. Okay, yeah, there we go. So it just takes us all talking about it. And that's good speculation. It probably was that way. All right, what other comments or thoughts? We've just got another minute or two left.
That shows how evil Jezebel was.
Oof.
In all of this, though, you know, Ahab's the king. So he was probably approving everything she was doing, but she's sort of the bad person for doing all this.
Yeah.
He was right along with it all. I mean,
It's a pretty good reminder for us that one bad influential person, whether it's in your life or that you're associated with or you're around, can be bad, bad for all of us. For sure, she was evil. Oh, man. We got lots of prophets. Good. Okay. Anything else? I won't belabor the point, but I want to give time to comment. So we will pick up, we'll leave off there next week, and then we'll get into a new discussion. I'll ring the bell, and we'll take just a quick break.